The house was 3 miles from the station, but before the dusty hired hack had rattled along for 5 minutes, the children began to put their heads out of the carriage window and say, "Aren't we nearly there?" And every time they passed a house, which was not very often, they all said, "Oh, is this it?" But it never was, till they reached the very top of the hill, just past the chalk quarry, and before you come to the gravel pit. And then there was a white house with a green garden and an orchard beyond. And Mother said, "Here we are." "How white the house is," said Robert. "And look at the roses," said Aunt Thea. "And the plums," said Jane. "It is rather decent," Cyril admitted. And the baby said, "Wanna go walkie?" And the hack stopped with a last rattle and jolt. Everyone got its legs kicked or its feet trotted on in the scramble to get out of the carriage that very minute. But no one seemed to mind. Mother, curiously enough, was in no hurry to get out. And even when she had come down slowly and by the step, and with no jump at all, she seemed to wish to see the boxes carried in, and even to pay the driver, instead of joining in that first glorious rush round the garden and orchard and the thorny, thistly, briary, brambly wilderness beyond the broken gate and the dry fountain at the side of the house. But the children were wiser for once. It was not really a pretty house at all. It was quite ordinary. And Mother thought it was rather inconvenient and was quite annoyed at there being no shelves to speak of and hardly a cupboard in the place. Father used to say that the ironwork on the roof and coping was like an architect's nightmare. But the house was deep in the country with no other house in sight, and the children had been in London for 2 years without so much as once going to the seaside, even for a day, by an excursion train. And so the White House seemed to them a sort of fairy palace set down in an earthly paradise. For London is like prison for children, especially if their relations are not rich. Of course, there are the shops and theaters and entertainment and things, but if your people are rather poor, you don't get taken to the theaters, and you can't buy things out of the shops. And London has none of those nice things that children may play with without hurting the things or themselves, such as trees and sand and woods and waters. And nearly everything in London is the wrong sort of shape, all straight lines and flat streets, instead of being all sorts of odd shapes like things are in the country. And trees are all different, as you know. And I'm sure some tiresome person must have told you that there are no two blades of grass exactly alike. But in the streets, where the blades of grass don't grow, everything is like everything else. This is why many children who live in the towns are so extremely naughty. They do not know what is the matter with them, and no more do their fathers and mothers, aunts, uncles, cousins, tutors, or governesses and nurses. But I know, and so do you now. Children in the country are naughty sometimes too, but that is for quite different reasons. Now, the children had explored the gardens and the outhouses thoroughly before they were caught and cleaned for tea, and they saw quite well that they were certain to be happy at the White House. And they thought so from the first moment, but when they found the back of the house covered with jasmine, all in white flower, and smelling like a bottle of the most expensive perfume that is ever given for a birthday present, and when they had seen the lawn, all green and smooth, and quite different from the brown grass in the gardens at Camden Town. And when they found the stable with a loft over it and some old hay still left, Well, they were almost certain. And when Robert had found the broken swing and tumbled out of it and got a bump on his head the size of an egg, and Cyril had nipped his finger in the door of a hutch that seemed made to keep rabbits in, if you ever had any, they had no longer any doubts whatever. The best part of it all was that there were no rules about not going to places and not doing things. You see, in London, almost everything is labeled, "You mustn't touch." And though the label is invisible, it's just as bad because you know it's there. Or if you don't, you very soon get told. The White House was on the edge of a hill with a wood behind it and the chalk quarry on one side and the gravel pit on the other. And down at the bottom of the hill was a level plain with queer-shaped white buildings where people burnt lime, and a big red brewery and other houses. And when the big chimneys were smoking and the sun was setting, the valley looked as if it was filled with golden mist, and the lime kilns and hop-drying houses glimmered and glittered till they were like an enchanted city out of the Arabian Nights. That I have begun to tell you about the place, I feel that I could go on and make this into a most interesting story about all the ordinary things that the children did, just the kind of things you do yourself, you know, and you will believe every word of it. And when I told about the children's being tiresome, as you are sometimes, your aunts would perhaps write in the margin of the story with a pencil, "How true," or "How like life." And you would see it and would very likely be annoyed. So, I will only tell you the really astonishing things that happened. And you may leave the book about quite safely, for no aunts and uncles either are likely to write "How true" on the edge of the story. Grown-up people find it very difficult to believe really wonderful things unless they have what they call proof. But children will believe almost anything, and grown-ups know this. And that is why they tell you that the earth is round like an orange, when you can see perfectly well that it is flat and lumpy. And why they say that the earth goes round the sun, when you can see for yourself any day that the sun gets up in the morning and goes to bed at night like a good sun as it is. And the earth knows its place and lies as still as a mouse. Yes, I dare say you believe all that about the earth and the sun. And if so, you will find it quite easy to believe that before Anthea and Cyril and the others had been a week in the country, they had found a fairy. At least they called it that, because that was what it called itself. And, of course, it knew best. But it was not at all like any fairy that you ever saw or heard of or read about. It was at the gravel pits. Father had to go away suddenly on business. And Mother had gone away to stay with Granny, who was not very well. They both went in a great hurry, and when they were gone, the house seemed dreadfully quiet and empty, and the children wandered from one room to another and looked at the bits of paper and string on the floors left over from the packing and not yet cleared up, and wished they had something to do. Well, it was Cyril who said, "I say, let's take our spades and dig in the gravel pits. We could pretend it's seaside." "Father said it was once," Anthea said. "He says there are shells there, thousands of years old." So they went. Of course, they had been to the edge of the gravel pit and looked over, but they had not gone down into it for fear Father should say they mustn't play there. And it was the same with the chalk quarry. The gravel pit is not really dangerous if you don't try to climb down the edges. But go the slow, safe way round by the roads, as if you were a cart. And each of the children carried its own spade and took it in turns to carry the lamb. He was the baby, and they called him that because ba was the first thing he ever said. And they called Anthea Panther, which seems silly when you read it, but when you say it, it sounds a little like her name. The gravel pit is very large and wide, with grass growing round the edges at the top, and dry, stringy wildflowers, purple and yellow. It is like a giant's washbowl, and there are mounds of gravel and holes in the sides of the bowl where gravel had been taken out. And high up in the steep sides, there are the little holes that are the little front doors of the little Bank Martins' little houses. And the children built a castle, of course, but castle building is rather poor fun when you have no hope of the swishing tide ever coming in to fill up the moat and wash away the drawbridge and, at the happy last, to wet everybody up to the waist at least. Well, Cyril wanted to dig out a cave to play smugglers in, but the others thought it might bury them alive, so it ended in all spades going to work to dig a hole through the castle to Australia. These children, you see, believed that the world was round, and that on the other side, the little Australian boys and girls were really walking wrong way up, like flies on the ceiling, with their heads hanging down into the air. And the children dug, and they dug, and they dug, and their hands got sandy and hot and red, and their faces got damp and shiny. The lamb had tried to eat the sand, and had cried so hard when he found that it was not, as he had supposed, brown sugar, that he was now tired out and was lying asleep in a warm, fat bunch in the middle of the half-finished castle. Well, this left his brothers and sisters free to work really hard, and the hole that was to come out in Australia soon grew so deep that Jane, who was called Pussy for short, begged the others to stop. "Suppose the bottom of the hole gave way suddenly," said she, "and you tumbled out among the little Australians. All the sand would get in their eyes." "Yes," said Robert, "and they would hate us and throw stones at us and not let us see the kangaroos or opossums or blue gums or emu brand birds or anything." Well, Cyril and Anthea knew that Australia was not quite so near as all that, but they agreed to stop using the spades and to go on with their hands. This was quite easy because the sand at the bottom of the hole was very soft and fine and dry, like sea sand, and there were little shells in it. Fancy it having been wet sea here once, all sloppy and shiny, said Jane, with fishes and conger eels and coral and mermaids and masts of ships and wrecked Spanish treasure. I wish we could find a gold doubloon or something, Cyril said. How did the sea get carried away? Robert asked. Not in a pail, silly, said his brother. Well, Father says the earth got too hot underneath, as you do in bed sometimes, so it just hunched up its shoulders, and the sea had to slip off, like the blankets do us, and the shoulders was left sticking out and turned into dry land. Let's go and look for shells. I think that little cave looks likely, and I see something sticking out there, like a bit of wrecked ship's anchor. And it's beastly hot in the Australian hole. Well, the others agreed. But Anthea went on digging. She always liked to finish a thing when she had once begun it. She felt it would be a disgrace to leave that hole without getting through to Australia. Well, the cave was disappointing because there were no shells. And the wrecked ship's anchor turned out to be only the broken end of a pickaxe handle. And the cave party were just making up their minds that sand makes you thirstier when it is not by the seaside. And someone had suggested that they all go home for lemonade when Anthina suddenly screamed, "Oh, come quick! It's alive! It'll get away quick!" They all hurried back. "It's a rat. I shouldn't wonder," said Robert. "Father says they infest old places. This must be pretty old if the sea was here thousands of years ago." "Perhaps it's a snake," said Jane, shuddering. "Let's look," said Cyril, jumping into the hole. "I'm not afraid of snakes. I like them. If it's a snake, I'll tame it, and it will follow me everywhere, and I'll let it sleep around my neck at night." "No, you won't," said Robert firmly. He shared Cyril's bedroom. "But you may if it's a rat." "Oh, don't be silly," said Anthea. "It's not a rat. It's much bigger. And it's not a snake. It's got feet. I saw them, and fur." "No, not the spade. You'll hurt it. Dig with your hands." "And let it hurt me instead? That's so likely, isn't it?" said Cyril, seizing a spade. "Oh, don't," said Anthea. "Squirrel, don't. It sounds silly, but it said something. It really and truly did." "What?" "It said, 'You let me alone.'" But Cyril merely observed that his sister must have gone off her head, and he and Robert dug with spades while Anthea sat on the edge of the hole, jumping up and down with hotness and anxiety. They dug carefully, and presently everyone could see that there really was something moving in the bottom of the Australian hole. Then Anthea cried out, "I'm not afraid, let me dig," and fell on her knees and began to scratch like a dog does when he has suddenly remembered where it was that he buried his bone. "Oh, I felt a fur," she cried, half laughing and half crying. "I did indeed, I did." When suddenly a dry, husky voice in the sand made them all jump back, and their hearts jumped nearly as fast as they did. "Let me alone," it said. And now everyone heard the voice and looked at the others to see if they had heard it too. "But we want to see you," said Robert bravely. "I wish you'd come out," said Anthea, also taking courage. "Oh, well, if that's your wish," the voice said, and the sand stirred and spun and scattered. Something brown and furry and fat came rolling out into the hole, and the sand fell off it, and it sat there, yawning and rubbing the ends of its eyes with its hands.